Blog Talk Radio.
In a world of so much hate, crime and injustice, what we need right now is some universal love. Unconditional love, y'all.
Man, this is the bad poet, the rhythm and the rhyme, the universal love, man, here on the Cosmic Citizen. You know, man, it's Jamaica time, man, you know. Hey, it's Andre Traversa, and we are here with Paula Thompson. How you doing, Paula?
Hi, Andre, I'm great. I love your Jamaica, man.
Well, thank you very much, man, you know. I'm sure Jamaica George might appreciate that, man, you know. Anyway, I just wanted to, you know, it's funny. I remember first hearing that song from Pato Bonten when I was at the international conference in LA in 2008, and he just did it on the guitar. But I like the studio version even better because you get the reggae beat going. And I just think it's so cool how your answer book readers can sort of take their previous interest and blend them into the Arantxa book, you know. And it's kind of like, you know, he's got that whole reggae thing going. He's talking about crime and injustice, you know. It's all that reggae talk is there. It's just great. So speaking of Pato Bonten, he is going to be at the Arantxa Family Festival this summer, and hopefully if all goes well, we will have Diane Lebrecht calling in during the second half of our show today to talk about the Family Festival, and she'll be on, you know, for the whole second half of the show, so a little like around an hour or so, and she'll take questions from the audience, from the peanut gallery, as they say, and you guys can call in. Our number again is 646-716-8158. So what do we have for the first half of the show today, Paula?
Well, we have the conference speech, the plenary speech given by Phil Taylor last summer at the summer seminar in Chicago at the Dominican University. Every summer, the Arantxa Book Fellowship for years and years now has done a summer conference. Every 3 years, it's the international conference, and then every other year in between that, it's the summer study session or the summer seminar. And Phil Taylor did a plenary speech, which is an opening speech. Every day we have a plenary speech, and this is one of the ones by Phil Taylor. As you know, we did Charles Olivier from the same conference a couple of weeks ago. So.
We sure did.
This is Phil, sure, and it is called Michael, Our Master Son. And the conference was about God consciousness, so it's about achieving consciousness of our Master Son, the Sovereign of our universe, Michael.
Well, why don't we let it roll here? I think I just want to say before we do it, I think it's so cool that we can do these, that we can play these kinds of things back, and the sound quality has been really good. And I want to just thank Mark Erickson for recording them, and so it just gives a quality of professionalism to our show that I think is just is really cool. So,
as you know, Mark. He did those interviews with that you did with Laura Amix and Dan.
Yes, he did.
And, Mark, you're on the board. We love you, man. Thanks so much. You do great work, and we are so deeply, deeply thankful that you're helping us out.
All right, why don't we go ahead and proceed here with Phil Taylor on The Cosmic Citizen.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm a teacher of history, high school by profession.
Wait a minute, that's the wrong one, actually.
One day, at the end of school...
Well, it says Phil Taylor.
Oh, I hope we've got it.
So, let's see. And I have one with Charles that... Did Charles introduce Phil?
I don't think so, because the last time... That sounds like what he said the last time. I don't think he introduced Phil Taylor.
Well, hold on. Let me play a few minutes of Charles.
There we go. Live radio, folks.
Did you notice how nimbly I went up those steps? Not bad for an old man. A lot of guys my age.
Okay, maybe that means that Charles introduced Phil.
Okay, let's try this again.
All right.
Good morning. I'm a teacher of history, high school by profession. One day, at the end of school, sitting alone in my classroom, I was upset with myself because I had been angry. Quite angry and expressed it, cussed a bit and so forth and so on. Didn't take the Lord's name in vain, but use other words. I was embarrassed before Jesus for doing that. I was embarrassed.
Andre.
Yes.
Just want to point out, Mark just pointed out on the board that there are two other speakers before Phil. And this was the one, the sharing of the moment, the consciousness of Michael. The moment.
Okay, why don't we just go ahead and play that then, so everybody can hear what went on. That's great.
Okay, just to clarify for our guest, Charles opened his session with an experience that he had with Jesus.
Absolutely.
So here.
Good morning. I'm a teacher of history, high school by profession. One day, at the end of school, sitting alone in my classroom, I was upset with myself because I had been angry. Quite angry and expressed it, cussed a bit and so forth and so on. Didn't take the Lord's name in vain, but used other words. I was embarrassed before Jesus for doing that. I was embarrassed before my adjuster as well, but I for some reason focused on Jesus that afternoon. And I will share with you one of the most precious experiences I've ever had with our Lord. It's a little difficult because sometimes when I think of his name, I get very choked up. I just have to think of his name. Hard enough to even say his name sometimes. So precious is he to me. Well, I'll do my best. Better make no promises. I'll just try to do my best. I was embarrassed, as I said, and I told him I understood the foolishness of being angry. As one writer put it once, anger blows out the lamp of the mind. It's not terribly useful or worthwhile. Anger. It's a foolish vice of the mind. heart. It's foolishness. So I talked to him a bit more and said I was sorry. Try to do better in the future. And then at some point he conveyed to me in substance I think he prefers to refer to me as Charlie than Charles. To Charlie, you forgive your students. He conveyed this in substance, I'm sharing with you. See, you forgive your students the drop of a hat. You don't hold any resentments toward your students ever. If they come to you with remorse for their foolishness, if they express their regret, you forgive them with no strings attached. No strings attached. Do you not do that? So I thought and said, yes, that's true, that is true. Jesus uses truth as well as love to show us the right path. You don't even give a second thought in forgiving your student. You don't even give a second thought. If any remorse, the slightest justification you have, the slightest reason you have, you forgive them. Yes, I do, Master. I'm trembling a bit. I have to hold on to this here podium. So much greater is my love for you. You need never fear. You need never be concerned about my love for you. Never. I will never leave you alone. I will always be with you. Later, I thought about his kind gift to me, and I thought about how he uses his truth to get your attention that you yourself wouldn't deny. It's really facts, meanings, and values that he uses as a kind of opening. And I also thought that his voice is the voice of the power and the grace of a Creator Son, a Master Creator Son. I call him Master Unbidden. But I have to tell you this morning there's something else. See, it isn't the voice only of power and grace. It is power and grace. When he touches me, I get completely touched. It's the most amazing thing. I'll never understand it. I feel it and experience. I'll never understand it. I just feel it and experience. But it's also, his voice is also the voice of true friendship. He speaks, he's powerful. Michael can stand it, so to speak, and stand at Salvington or stand at Urantia. He can turn his head or reach out his arm and touch paradise and next, and he can also reach out and touch a place like Urantia at the same time. Probably the only person in Lebanon that can do that. All that power and grace. But he's a friend foremost. It's the voice of a friend. A true friend. A devoted, affectionate, loving friend. That heals a broken heart. And brings light to the joy in our heart. That's what friends do. God bless you.
It's interesting that what you chose to say, Charles, and the experience you chose to relate, because oftentimes when I need Jesus the most, and I talk to him all the time, I direct most of my prayers to him, but it's in times of self-doubt and even self-recrimination. And oftentimes, those things can be brought about in your own heart and your own mind because of something you've done that you're not especially proud of. But also they can be heaped upon you by some well-meaning friend. And the instance I'm going to share, and like you, Charles, I can't think about my master without my heart swelling in my chest, almost to the point of breaking. Not for sorrow, but for supreme joy and humility in his presence. And I have this theory that the heart is a living well. The heart is a well of living water. And it can only get so full. The water has to go somewhere. So where does it go? Out through the tear ducts and down the cheeks. So like you, if I cry, you'll know why. Some emotions go beyond words. Some words have no meaning. Jesus is a meaning without a word. A person had made me feel bad about my spiritual self. This person had made me feel like if only I was a better person spiritually, perhaps I would have extraordinary experiences. Hear voices, see visions. And this person had made me feel really bad about myself. Like I was a real spiritual chump. And I said to Michael, you know, Master, everything I've done for you. I give you all that I have, all that I am. And if I have disappointed you, I'm so sorry. Because I would never do that. I love you so much. I love you so much, Master. I'm so sorry if I've disappointed you. And that night, I had a dream. And in the dream, I was with all of you. And we were in the most beautiful banquet hall you can imagine. The table went on forever. And it was so beautifully appointed with fine crystalline plates and goblets full of clear sparkling water and glasses of wine and beautiful place settings with silverware. And we were all together at this banquet. Oh, it was so beautiful. And we were laughing like we always do and talking. So glad to be in each other's company. So full of love and joy just to be with each other. And someone came up behind me and put their arms around me. And I couldn't see them. Have you ever been sitting at a table and someone comes up behind you and puts their arms around you? Fine, strong arms, the strong arms of a man that a woman loves to feel around her. And he hugged me so hard. And I touched his arm. And I said, "Who is this?" And I turned to see his face. And I said, "It's Michael." And I cried in his arms. And he just held me and let me cry. And I knew in that feeling of that strength and all the love that being has for me and for all of us. He doesn't want us to be disappointed in ourselves or think that he is disappointed in us. He knows who we are and how hard we try. And there's peace and there's love and there's release of guilt and shame and doubt and blame. And that's what he said. You will know the truth in his beautiful musical voice, which I hear in my ear when I read the Arantia book. In the ear of my spirit, I hear it, his beautiful musical voice. You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. What will it make you free from? From guilt and shame and blame and doubt and fear and sorrow. So thanks for bearing with me through that.
Thank you, Paula, for that, and reminded me of back in the day when I worked at Jesusonian and Good Cheer Press, and we would start out each week with Monday Moments with the Master. Under his banner, we would pray and dedicate our week's work there to everything he wanted us to do. And it was really special. It was, I think it was actually during that time that this happened at my house. I had moved to Golden, and my daughter had to take the bus to school, and I had to drive about a mile and a half or so to go pick her up when she got home. And as I went to pick her up this one day, there was somebody sitting next to her on the ground crying. And she brought this woman home, and she explained that she was a transgendered homeless person who had moved to Colorado from another state to be with a lover who had just kicked her out. And she had nothing. And she had suffered a lot of verbal abuse in the meantime. And I felt myself taken aback because I didn't know how to relate to a transgendered person. And so I said my prayer, and I said, Jesus, you know, let me have your mind, because mine's not working real good right now, and I know this person needs something. And I sat down, and I talked with her, and I heard the gospel of the kingdom coming out of my mouth as I said to her, you are a child of God, and you deserve to be treated with respect. You deserve to have true love in your life. And as I paused, I heard, this message is for you too. And I was living in a verbally abusive situation, and I felt his love encompass me as I ministered to her. And we talked for a couple of hours, and at the end of the time I embraced her. And I really remembered this incident when Phil asked me, because as I embraced her, she said to me, God brought me here today to hear what you had to say.
I was asked to share something. I went into the mind arena of choice, because that's where I usually go. It's a good place to start. Sometimes it's hard for me to make the transition from the mind arena into the heart, and usually I do it through music. It works the best for me, and often I feel that eloquence like some of my friends out here and some who have preceded me. But the thing about the Urantia book is that it never fails in its eloquence. And I was thinking about some thoughts I wanted to share on how I know when I hear the Master's voice. And the first thing I thought about was that the Spirit of Truth, the Master's Spirit, the combined Spirit of the Father and the Son. And I was reading, it says, the Spirit of Truth is concerned primarily with the revelation of the Father's spirit nature and the Son's moral character. So I was thinking about that and trying to put that together with the mind arena of choice. And I was thinking about, well, choice and morality. And our first moral choice is when we get the gift of the Spirit from the Father. And then I remembered, every time man makes a reflective moral choice, he immediately experiences a new divine invasion of his soul. And I thought, wow. Yeah, okay. So how do I get this divine invasion? How do I invite this divine invasion? And well, it's pretty clear, the moral choice, and then the moral choice and the Spirit of Truth. And so it began to coalesce a little bit with the truth and morality, telling the truth, and the entire experience of a juster communion is one involving moral status, mental motivation, and spiritual experience. So this morality thing kept popping up in my thinking here. And then cosmically moral and divinely spiritual character represents the creature's capital accumulation of personal decisions, which have been illuminated by sincere worship, glorified by intelligent love, and consummated in brotherly service. And I went, oh, yeah. Now we're tying this all together. Choice, truth, morality, service, love. Moral evaluation with a religious meaning, spiritual insight, connotes the individual's choice between good and evil, truth and error, material and spiritual, human and divine, time and eternity. So all these things were working together to, in my mind, and in a personal level, the Master has spoken to me in this way through music and through creative expression. I guess I want to share a poignant moment of a song that I received, that I wrote one time after a deep meditation, and it was the most profound experience of the Master that I had ever had, and I wrote it, and it was a song about the Master, and one day maybe I'll share it. It's so precious to me, as I can relate with Charlie. It's so precious that I've never played it for anybody. Maybe that's selfish, or I don't know. Maybe it's just precious. But one day I'd like to play it for y'all. The Spirit of Truth is concerned primarily with the revelation of the Father's spirit nature and the Son's moral character. Came back around again to morality and this divine invasion of the soul. I try to make decisions, moral decisions, so I can get that divine invasion of the soul, because you've all experienced it, and you know when you make those decisions and you get that divine invasion and you feel the Master, and he's in you and he's around you and he's guiding you, you just absolutely know it. So that's how I hear it, in the echoes of righteous harmony. Bless you all.
Good morning. A few weeks ago, Phil made a request to a group of Urantians online, who many of whom were not going to be here today, and asked them to send in experiences that they'd had hearing Michael's voice. Michael, you continue showing truth and illuminating the way forward, the way of living love, especially in the pulsing fabric of my relationships with my brothers and sisters. Indweller of my soul, lover of my soul growth, I accept you as a partner in my decisions, and divine spark driving me towards truth and truthfulness, I love you. Our universe is your creation. Our planet is of your making. We are in your cosmic family. Our home is of your making. You are the source of love for us and the giver of the spirit of truth. When we remember you, we are encircled in your loving care. My mouse isn't working, so I can't page down for the rest of this. I'm going to try to remember it. There's one particular that caught my fancy. On a daily basis, the Master comes into my life. He helps me to see the Father through him. In times of deep trouble, he has picked me up. I've been having problems with one of my teenage children. I'm getting to the end of my rope, wondering if I can go on, what my options are. I hear his voice saying, "Remember Jude?" And I start to laugh. And I think, "That's right. You spent the weekend in jail with him one Passover weekend, loving him, supporting him, but letting him feel the consequences of his action, protecting his privacy and not sharing it with the family when we got home, waiting until it was time for Jude to admit of his own will what he had put you through. I remember you when I'm driving and I'm praying, and your voice illuminates my thoughts. I often pray when I'm driving. I pontificate. I get really full of myself, and I hear you laughing at how ridiculous it is for me to take myself so seriously, because all of the most eloquent words come from you. All of our most eloquent thoughts come from you, Master." Introducing one of our rising stars, a truly devoted servant, and our final plenary speaker of this spiritually infused summer study session, 2009, is truly an honor. I feel privileged to be getting the chance to know him better these past few years, and to be inspired and energized by his positive attitude and love-saturated soul. He's a carpenter, as is my own husband and Christina's. And let me take this opportunity to say to the lovely, historic Rebecca of Nazareth, your instincts were right. Being married to a carpenter is a very good thing. He lives in southern Vermont with his wife and two children. He's an active member in his community as a school board member and the chair of a committee charged with rebuilding the local high school, a 100-year-old high school. He is co-founder of the Eden Tree Fellowship, a local interfaith organization that seeks to advance religious thought and understanding through local community forums. He's kind of my hero. He's a general counselor with the fellowship and chairman of the UAI International Conference Committee. He also serves as a teacher facilitator for the Urantia Book Internet School. And his personal passion for service spearheaded a whole conference last summer at UCLA, for which the theme, the thrill of loving service, really inspired all who attended. Certainly it inspired me. He's a refreshingly real and humble speaker with a great sense of humor. Let's give a warm and enthusiastic welcome to Phil Taylor.
Thank you. Thank you all. That was absolutely fantastic. And when we were putting this together, I mean, we're just kind of doing it by the seat of our pants and at the last minute, and we had no idea how that would turn out. And just with that music and all your wonderful insights about Michael and your experiences with him, that we thank you all, because that just turned out tremendously. And thank you for that wonderful introduction. I'm very humbled to have such an introduction like that. Well, before I started my speech here today, I did want to just do a couple shout outs and a big thank yous to some people who've done a lot of work here today. And I know Barbara's going to get up and do a bunch of thank yous after me, but I just wanted to thank Barbara for all her work and putting on this conference. And I think it's I certainly think the spirit is in the house and in this conference tonight, and I know we're all going to go home with our spiritual batteries recharged and ignited for more thrilling service adventures back home. And I also just wanted to thank one other person who's been doing quite a lot, and that's Christina. She's just been doing a wonderful work. And, you know, talking about flying by the seat of her pants, she pulled together that ceremony last night, which I think was just a wonderful initial start of, looks like something that will become a great tradition with the fellowship and with the general council members. And I appreciate her initiative. And Meredith, I think you had something to do with that, too. We appreciate your initiative in making that happen, because that really adds to the culture and strength of our organization. So thank you. So let me first say it is great to be back here at this conference among the living. I think it's probably pretty common knowledge that I've only spent half the conference here. On my way down to the conference on the airplane, I was stricken for the second time in a week with a bout of the stomach flu, and ended up shacking up in a hotel by the airport until I was better. And I will say one thing. It's that public knowledge of the fact that you've had a stomach flu really puts a damper on the way people welcome you when you come into a conference. I had people coming up and say, "Oh, Phil, how you doing? Good to see you. Good to see you. I got a workshop to go to." I will say there were a couple people who really did give me a genuine and warm embrace. They couldn't be with us today, I'm sorry. I hope they're going to have a speedy recovery. So, given all this has gone on in the past week, I feel a little bit unprepared for my talk today about the consciousness of Michael. And you know, it was my intention to do spend the past week in a lot of prayer and contemplation on this speech in preparation. And then, while it was true I was doing a lot of praying, it was just more praying towards a porcelain god than a god of the eternal universe. Anyway, I'll stop with the jokes about the stone of glue. So, what I wanted to talk to you today was, as I said, about this consciousness of Michael. And when I first started out on this, preparing this speech, I do what I always do, and I went to Michael and I said, I lay this speech before you as an opportunity for you to speak through me and to give me some insights of what you would like to share. And I had the idea in mind that I was going to talk about the consciousness of Michael from the terms of my own personal experiences, because that's always a place that I like to speak from. But when I shared this with Michael, it didn't seem that that was what he wanted me to speak about, because I remember the thought coming to my mind was that consciousness of me is for each and every person to decide and discern for themselves. And that it was purely a personal and an individual thing. So then I knew that I wasn't going to speak about that consciousness in that respect. So I said, okay, Michael, what is it that you want me to talk about? And so after praying about it, the thought came to my mind was togetherness. And I said, okay, well, how does that relate to consciousness of you? And so I did what I do a lot when I get a word like that comes into my mind, and I went to the dictionary and looked up the definition of togetherness. And the definition that I found was into a union with wholes or parts so as to be combined or joined with each other. And then I began to think about my audience and the people who I was going to speak to today. And I knew that I would be speaking to a large number of people who are general council members, TDA members, people who are leaders in their societies, and some folks from the UAI. But in large part, I was going to be speaking to a lot of people who labor for this revelation in groups and in their work together. And I knew that was what I was going to speak about. I was going to speak about consciousness of Michael in our work together, as we work together and labor and strive to serve this revelation, strive to serve our God, and strive to serve our fellows. And it became more apparent that this was really an apropos subject, because I know, as you all know, we've been talking about this issue a lot in the General Council and on the SOC admin list, because one of the things that we're finding that we're having a lot of challenges or struggles with is this problem of working together in groups, because we are often experience friction and the challenges of working together. And I certainly don't mean to imply that we never succeed. There's a lot of success in our work together as groups, and we do have a lot of great stories and successes that come out of it. But for in a lot of ways, we are experiencing a lot of conflict and friction in our work together. Right now, you know, the General Council is struggling with finding a common direction and setting up a strategic plan. And we're talking about the struggles that we have in the difference of the opinions and the difference in opinions and the outlooks of the various General Council members. We have people who believe in aggressive growth of dissemination, while other people are more about slow growth. There's people who are very idealistic, and there's others who are extremely practical. There are people who are fiscally conservative, and some people who want to be liberal with that money and let you put it to good use. There's people who believe in the certification of teachers, and people who completely disagree with that idea. And we find that in our work together, that we truly are a representative group of diverse individuals and diverse opinions. But in these diversity, we find that there's often conflict sometimes, and when we try to work together. Now, one thing that we can say is that in so many ways this conflict is good. After all, we're Urantia book readers, and by nature we're strong-willed, independent-minded, free-thinking individuals. We are not sheep. We are, by nature, because we are attracted to this book, strong-willed individuals. I think that had to be so. There's so many people here who came from different backgrounds and really had to, you know, some people who have Jewish backgrounds or Catholic backgrounds or Baptist backgrounds, and you all had to be really strong-willed and independent-minded to be able to stand up for this revelation. But given all that, we still do have these challenges. There's great diversity in our opinion, and from this diversity, great things can come about. I think one of the great things that I find in this pattern of the universe is how many great things that come out of divergent ideas and differing of opinions. Conflict can really be rewarding. But the fact remains is that we still have to find ways to work together in love and in service, as the Master asked us to love and serve each other. So how is it that we can deal and work with these struggles and these differences of opinions and conflicts and still find ourselves in loving service to one another? Well, this is where we find the need for the Master. And especially we need a consciousness of the Master. Because after all, who is it that would better teach us to love and serve our fellows than the Master? And I believe it is in the consciousness of the Master that we can find effective group functioning. Now, I know some of you are thinking, well, hold on a minute there, because didn't the Master always step aside in relationship to the group? After all, we know from reading about the apostles that quite often when the apostles had these struggles and these challenges of working together, especially when the disciples of John and the apostles, poor Andrew had to go to Jesus and said, hey, help us figure this out. And Jesus would say, oh no. He said, I stand aside from that. That is for you to figure out for yourself. In fact, he said a great line there. He said, it is not wise for the parent, for the host, to participate in the family troubles of his guests. A wise parent never takes sides in the petty quarrels of his children. So then how is it that the Michael is there present in our group? After all, don't they say, wherever two or more gather in my name, there I am? Isn't Michael there a part of us? How is it that he's standing aside and that yet still with us? Well, I think the answer is in the fact that he is with us in our relationship as individuals. I think it was once said, and I forgot to bring the quote, but I am a representative of the Father to the individual, but not to the group. If you have purely religious, come to me for your purely religious and spiritual problems. But to those other problems, those problems of how the group functions, that's for you to decide for yourself. So it's in this consciousness that I think we can find effective group functioning. Because after all, it is Michael who is guiding us how to truly love and serve our fellows. And though he may not be helping us make those decisions, he's truly helping us to love and understand one another. To better explain kind of what I'm trying to say here, I wanted to go back to the example of my two children and their petty quarrels and my attempt to be a wise parent and not take sides in those petty quarrels. My son Zachary and my daughter Allie are 3 and 6 respectively, and they basically are putting the P and Q in petty quarrels. Right now they are just constantly going on one another. In fact, I was talking to my wife on the phone yesterday, and we talked for about 5 minutes. And I would say we communicated during that time for about 30 seconds, because the other 4.5 minutes was spent with my wife being on the phone saying, like, no, 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 Zachary, put that down. No. Allie, get your finger out of your brother's eye. No, stop that. No, put that down. And that's kind of what it's like with it, with the kids. And I'm trying to be that wise parent and find a way where I cannot take sides, but still teach my daughter, because my son's still too young right now, but still teach my daughter how to really, truly love her brother and care for him. And I remember, you know, one time she came up and she said, you know, Zachary just stole my my favorite marker. And I said to her, well, why don't you give him some more markers and maybe some paper so he can some color some more. And I was trying to do that in a way that I could teach her to love. And as you are giggling, I can tell, you can see that it totally did not work. But you get the point of what I'm trying to do here. And I think that's what it's like with our relationship with our Master. As we try and work together in our groups, and as we try to love and understand one another, but at the same time reconcile these differences, we find that the Master is always there, guiding us into those appropriate ways in which we can truly love and serve our fellows. He's guiding us in a way that we can help us find those loving responses, in which really, to me, take form in the fruits of the Spirit. For I think that is really where he can guide us the most. Because if you look at these fruits of the Spirit, the love, the joy, the peace, long-suffering, the gentleness, the goodness, the faith, the meekness and temperance, these are all qualities that are found in relationships to our fellows. And it's as he fosters these fruits through our communion with him that he allows this group to function more effectively, to more lovingly, and to withstand the struggles and the rigors and the challenges of the tests that come about from working with a diverse order of groups. And I think the funny thing is that as we experience these challenges and these struggles, we tend to kind of beat ourselves up a bit. We tend to look at these irritations and these aggravations as sort of an indictment of our love for one another, as if, you know, we're really not being true to Michael and not being true to the group because we're being irritated sometimes by our fellows, or sometimes we're failing to understand them. But the fact of the matter is, it's just a normal part of our training in our ascension career. All these struggles that we have in working with groups, they're a part of the socialization of our Marantia personalities. And that training begins right now. In fact, it continues on up all the way to Adentia, where they say we will be chiefly occupied with the mastery of group ethics, the secret of pleasant and profitable interrelationships between the various universe and super-universe orders of intelligent personalities. That's from paper 43 in the Constellations. And they continue to go on to tell us that we will continue to learn how to live happily, work effectively, abide joyfully, and cooperate heartily with diverse universe beings. These struggles, these challenges that we have in working with our groups, they're all a natural course of our universe career. And while we may get frustrated at times, they're really opportunities to be embraced and to partner up in consciousness with Michael and say, show me the way. Show me the way to better love and understand my fellows. Because the fact of the matter is, and we all know this, that if we can get groups working together, great things can happen. They tell us that the sum of 10 men lifting together is far greater than the sum of 10 lifting alone. They tell us that two personalities working together in spiritual harmony is something far more than double the potential, but more like quadruple the potential that stands for us. And this power that we have in getting these groups to function together can really create something incredible and special. Because what it is creating is something of a spiritual culture that I think is a powerful statement of the character of our organization and the people who are working for it. Because when we get these people working together, it's not like just one person standing out living as Jesus lived again, but it's a group of people standing out living together as Jesus lived again. And that's perhaps what we need most, because I can't think of any greater tool of dissemination than this powerful spiritual culture of men and women dedicated in loving service to one another, in consciousness of Michael, and serving this revelation, because I think that's what's going to attract people to this organization and to this revelation. I want to speak of one more thing right now, and then I was going to read to you just something from the vine, about the vine and the branches. But one of the great challenges I think we have as an organization, as groups, is coming to a greater understanding of the Father's will. That was one thing that always amazed me about when Jesus said, you know, when you're making your decisions, I'm going to leave the group be by itself. I can always imagine Andrew just kind of saying there to Jesus, like, are you sure you don't want to be in on this? Because we have a really good chance of screwing this up big time. But you know what? Jesus was cool with that. He was, you go ahead and make your decisions. You know, I leave this gospel to you. I leave this revelation to you. I entrust you to make those decisions. And I think why he could entrust us so much is that if he knew that if a group of men and women can get together in loving association with one another, they truly could make great decisions. Because it's in that loving association with one another we increase the capacity to really truly know the Father's will. You know, one individual sitting down and trying to seek the Father's will, you know, there's a good chance they're gonna find it out for a given situation or a given decision. But a lot of times I think just one individual gets just part of it, doesn't see the whole thing. You know, it's the limited of the mortal viewpoint. But if you get five or six people, you know, or a group of people dedicated to seeking the Father's will, I bet there's a really much better chance that you're going to find that will, because you're eliminating the possibility of error. You're increasing the potential of that group. But the fact of the matter is, we can only find the Father's will if we maintain this true loving connection with the Master and yield these fruits, spiritual fruits, in our associations with our fellows, because it's in those yielding those spiritual fruits that these contrasts and friction that can occur in this diversity can subside, so that we can truly come to a sense of unity of purpose, where we can really find the power in group decision making and finding the Father's will. And before I go with you today, actually, I just have to get my book, so hold on a sec. I want to read to you today just the vine and the branches, because I think that really just brings it on home. And Jesus said, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. I am the vine, and you are the branches. And the Father requires of me only that you shall bear much fruit. The vine is pruned only to increase the fruitfulness of its branches. Every branch coming out of me which bears no fruit, the Father will take away. Every branch which bears fruit, the Father will cleanse, that it may bear more fruit. Already are you clean through the word that I have spoken, but you must continue to be clean. You must abide in me, and I in you. The branch will die if it is separated from the vine, and the branch cannot bear fruit except as it abides in the vine. So neither can you yield the fruits of loving service except you abide in me. Remember, I am the real vine, and you are the living branches. He who lives in me and I in him will bear much fruit of the Spirit, and the experience the supreme joy of yielding this spiritual harvest. If you will maintain this living spiritual connection with me, you will bear abundant fruit. If you abide in me and my words live in you, you will abide, you will be able to commune freely with me, and then can my living Spirit so infuse you that you may ask whatsoever my Spirit wills, and do all this with the assurance that the Father will grant us our petition. Herein the Father is glorified, that the vine has many living branches, and that every branch bears much fruit. And when the world sees these fruit-bearing branches, my friends who love one another, even as I have loved them, all men will know that you are truly my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you.
live in my love, even as I live in the Father's love. If you do as I have taught you, you shall abide in my love, even as I have kept the Father's word and evermore abide in his love. Thank you.
Wow. Abide
that
in
was...
me. Are you there, Paula?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Wow, there's so much to respond to with all that. First of all, did you realize that you were going to be coming on there? That your speech was going to be played there?
No, I didn't. Well, I did when Mark mentioned on the board that those several testimonies, that actually what that was a worship session that preceded that speech by Phil. And so there was about five different presenters, actually, that presented some intimate moments with Jesus. Crystalline was on that.
Right, she was too, yeah. So it was James Woodward and wasn't it
James,
Joanne Weidman? Was that?
Joanne Weidman, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, so you got a lot of people there. Give me
there he is saying your volume is low, Andre.
I'm sorry?
Someone on the board is saying your volume is low.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Is that better? I'm a lot of times, I'll tell you these intimate details. Sometimes I do the show lying down in my bed, and sometimes I forget to hold the phone close to my mouth. So this is not a recording studio, folks. Anyway, but thank you for letting me know that. So I will make an effort to go ahead and speak more clearly into the telephone. Anyway, we were talking about. I was asking you about. Did you? Because I was thinking, man. I mean. Do you remember how vulnerable you were there? You know how you're all teared up and everything, and so I must have been interesting for you to listen to that again.
Yeah, as I recall, that was that particular story is deeply, deeply moving to me because it was so. Oh man, I was crying just listening to it. And it does that to me every single time. Very hard for me to get through that story without crying because I'm so deeply moved by the personal way in which Jesus gave me such real comfort. I mean, boy, I prayed for the comfort, and it came. And it came in a way that I didn't even imagine.
Well, I remember you telling me that story before. You told me that story to... in LA, because I was sharing with you a sort of similar experience where I had a Christian friend of mine who told me he didn't think I was a Christian anymore because I rejected the atonement doctrine, and you told me that story, and it was very moving, and you told me, and you gave me one of those wonderful kisses on the cheek that you give, and I just remember you telling me that story, and it was just so great to hear about that dream that you had, and what a wonderful experience that must have been. It's like that was like a direct communication right from the Master himself.
Oh man, it was as Jung would say, a big dream.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, definitely a big dream. Well, and you know, and it's funny, and it's before we go to, I don't know if Diana's called in yet, has she?
I think so. Yes.
Okay. Before we get to her, I just wanted to say, it was just cool when Phil Taylor was quoting the Jesus talking about abide in me. And, you know, that makes me think of a couple of things. One is just that we need to spend time with Jesus. You know, and I think that's really important that we set aside time to spend with him and you know, in prayer and in communion. And the other thing that it made me think of was sometimes I hear things like that, like, you know, abide in me, you know, and sometimes people, you know, or if you don't abide in me, you won't bear fruit. And you know, there's one way of looking at that. Sometimes I think we can look at that negatively and say, you know, you better abide in me or you won't bear fruit. You know, it's kind of like, it's almost like a threat. But, you know, if you really look at it, what Jesus is really, he's just stating a fact. He's just saying, you know what, if this is what you want, this is what you need to do. You know, and that's how we bear fruit, by receiving his love and, you know, by his allowing his love to flow into us. You know, it's kind of like, it's like, you know, it's like fertilizer for, you know, for plants. You know, if we don't get that, if we don't get that nourishment, it's not going to, you know. And so I think Jesus is just, you know, pointing that out.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I take it very literally. And before I go on, I'm being reminded to mention that Charles Olivier started that section. We did say that, I think, early on when we first started, but it bears repeating that Charles Olivier was the first person to speak.
And one thing I got from that, by the way, from Charles' statement was that one thing I got from that was that he didn't actually say this, I don't think, but I think one of the points I think Jesus was trying to make to him was, hey, you forgive your students, you know, drop of a hat. So two things he's trying to say. One is, you know, you don't hold grudges. You don't let anger, you know, consume you. And the other thing I think Jesus is also maybe pointing out was, you know, have some compassion for yourself. Forgive yourself just the way you forgive your students. And that's kind of what I got from that too.
Oh, yeah. It was just very powerful, you know. That whole session was just really, really a beautiful session and indicative of what I love the most about Urantia conferences, when you can be so safe with a group of people. And that was a pretty decent-sized group of people. There was 100 people in there that you can share at that level with them and know that you're safe.
Absolutely.
To open your heart and share very deep and meaningful experiences. That's special when you feel that safe with a group of people.
Yeah. Hey, before we get to Diane, and Diane, we are going to get to you. Don't worry. How much time do we have left?
We have 53 minutes, Andre.
Okay. We will get to you, Diane. There are just two real quick orders of business I want to make sure we cover. One is, and I should have asked you this off the air, Paula, but as I said before, sometimes this is live radio. We forget these things. We have one more segment that I don't know if you've got it, but we have one more segment we need to play from Robert Bornstein. He was on our show some months ago with his wife, talking about their book Healthy Dependency. And there's and he has another book out called When Someone You Love Needs Nursing Home Care. And I had promised him that we were going to play all three of the segments of the interview that I did with him on that topic. And I was wondering if you had the last segment by any chance at your disposal.
I don't.
Okay, well, that's all right. We'll do that another time. But let me make a plug for it again. The book is called When Someone You Love Needs Nursing Home Care. It's by Robert Bornstein, Boornstein, and his wife is Mary Langerand. That's Langerand. It's R-A-N-D. It's published by New Market Press. And that's a book that's kind of a self-explanatory title. It's about how to help someone get assisted living or nursing home care or any of those things. So I know that's something we normally don't discuss on the air, but I told him I would, I promised him we would promote that. So I wanted to make sure we got that in. The other thing I wanted to just say, and something for those of you who don't know, I'm going to be coming out to Colorado for Christmas, staying with my friend Andre Rodeda. This is another Andre. We'd love to get Andre on the air sometime, actually. He's a really smart guy. And I'm going to be also seeing Paula again. And I was just going to ask you, Paula, I was going to ask you this off the air, but I'll just go ahead and ask you on the air. Do you know if Mo Siegel is having his study group on the 23rd of December, which is a Tuesday? Do you know if he's having the study group that Tuesday or not?
No, that would be the 22nd, I think, Andre. And I assume he is. He's not saying that he isn't having it. So.
Oh, I thought it was. I thought the 23rd was a Tuesday. But I could be wrong.
I think the Christmas.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you're right. You're right. No, actually, you're right. The 22nd is a Tuesday. That is correct. That is correct. For those of you who ever want to go out to Mo Siegel's place in Boulder, he's probably going to be doing his study group on the 22nd. So I'm probably going to end up flying in that day so I can be there. So why don't we go ahead and go to Diane?
Okay. Diane, are you there?
I've been there for a long time, my friend.
How are you, Diane?
Wonderful. How are you?
Great, great. I'm sorry we had to take care of a few things there before you got on the air. But anyway, well, we are so glad to have you back again. I know that we had had you on the air before to talk in shorter segments about what we're about to talk about. We're going to give you a little more time this time to talk about this wonderful event that is coming up in Montreal, Canada, this summer over the 4th of July weekend, called the Urantia Family Festival. Now, I know we've talked about this a couple of times on the air before, but again, in case there are new listeners, What is the purpose of this festival, and what made you decide to put it on?
Well, first of all, it is not that I decided to put it on. It was a project that started many years ago, Andre and Paula. It started here in Montreal in 1992, just before IC93, if you remember, which was held outside of Montreal. And it is a project that I started and was a success right from the start within the province of Quebec. And then I got involved with IC93 and fell in love with a group of people from Boulder, so much so that right after the event of IC93, I moved with my partner to Boulder to go visit the people there and live this actual spiritual spirit of fraternity, of brotherhood that was there. And so, to my surprise, the Urantia family project was put on the back burner, as I call it. And I felt so sad because I remember saying, God, dear Jesus, it seems that it was going to be something really beautiful and involving, like the Urantia book readers from all over the world, you know. I can't understand, but anyway, it was put on the back burner, and I totally forgot about it. And it was almost like a sadness in my heart. But life went on. And then this year, something happened in the spring, which brought it right back on the front burner. I'm not going to go through the whole story on the air because it would take a lot of time. But it was really wonderful because, again, it was unbeknownst to me, something that happened. I went to see a movie called Earth, a beautiful production with three major productors, BBC, Disney, and I think it's National Geographic anyway. And just as I was thanking God for this beautiful movie production, having been done with this unity of those three big organizations, I had this inspiration that we could do the same thing within the Urantia family, within the Urantia community, if we would all unite together and start give reality to this Urantia family through the festival. And so right when I got this inspiration, I started to email people and make some calls to see, you know, just to feel the pulse, like a doctor would try to see if there's a pulse of life somewhere. So I called, I emailed people, and right away people said, wow, what a great idea. Let's do it. Let's just do it. And that's how it was brought back on the front burner, and ever since then, it's been a wonderful, wonderful project that I'm so happy to be on the program to share with all the readers, because it is our festival. It's everybody's festival, and what I would like to discuss today, if it's okay with both of you, is that this is a teamwork, and there's already an incredible team working together to make this festival a total success. And what I did, I called them and I told them that you, Andre, and Paula had offered the opportunity to talk about this festival on the air, and what would they like to offer. So I would like to name a few names as part of the team, and that maybe throughout the rest of the program we could give a vision of the festival from the mind of one of the team members and then from the mind of another team members, so that we start to feel that spirit of family. Would that be all right with you?
Sure, sure. And by the way, I want to make sure, we talked this before, I want to make sure if anybody has questions about the festival, how to sign up, how to, you know, that they call in. Our number again here is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. Why don't you go ahead and give us some of these details, Diane?
Great. And before I go on that, I just want to say, Paula, we love you. We absolutely love you so much. And Andre, thank you so much for playing all of those programs today that we listened to, because I was listening to this as I was waiting to be on the air to talk about the Family Festival, and it all, I don't know if you agree with me, but to me I felt a crescendo. It all moved into what we are talking right now. It was really topics that brought us to realize that we are a family and we are growing together, and we're seeing the growth and we're witnessing the growth of all this. And so this is so apropos what we are discussing now, what I'm explaining now, as you will see. And a clarification needs to be made, by the way. I felt the need this morning as I was taking notes to make a clarification with the United Urantia Family Festival. There's been something going on called Urantia Canada, and some readers, actually many readers, have heard of a situation that happened with the group Urantia Canada, and that there was a legal issue that I'm not going to get into. But I just wanted to clarify that, first of all, some people were saying, hey, you know, we love this Urantia Family Festival, but they thought that Urantia Canada legal issue and the Urantia Family Festival were the same thing, and they are not. They are totally two separate things. So I just want it to be known that all the readers must feel assured that the festival is going very well. It's happening. Nothing is going in the negative. It's all going in the positive. And the beautiful gift that I want to share with everyone is that the legal issue that had circulated around internationally and even reached the foundation is being resolved as I'm talking now, has been in the process of being resolved peacefully and without going to court. So this has been such a beautiful thing. And again, it's part of the family growth to come to. I was talking to Mo Siegel, and he was saying that they had heard about this and the foundation was concerned about this issue because we know that the master said that we should not take each other to court. And it's a gift in disguise. Like I was saying to some people, it's a beautiful gift in disguise. And it shows how much we've grown because on the one side, the president of the foundation, Mo Siegel, has informed us that this issue has brought a beautiful gift, which is that in the future they will make sure that no licensee will, you know, take anyone to court with another licensee. And at the same time, it has brought the other gift, which is that the people involved, which was Urantia Canada, have seen the logic, the wisdom and all that, have acted positively, and have decided to resolve it peacefully and without going to court. So I just thought it was important to say it on the air because some people, some readers were concerned and said, oh, no, we're not going to relive, you know, what has been lived in the past. Well, folks, it shows that we are no longer at the same level as at the same growth stage, just like a baby becomes a child and then, you know, an adolescent and an adult. It shows that as a Urantia family, we have been growing because this issue has been resolving itself so fast, and it is a pleasure for me to mention it because it's very encouraging. I hope you agree with this.
Mm.
This
of
said,
course.
I'm sorry?
It's very encouraging indeed. And,
it is.
You know, I think that somebody told me once, and I like to point out to people that conflict exists all the way to paradise. You know,
right.
I hear a lot of times from Urantia book readers that, well, why, you know, why are you guys in a disagreement about that? You know, you should be more spiritual than that. And I'm always like, well, what makes you think that being spiritual means that you never have conflict? We know that conflict exists on this planet more than it does anywhere else, and that it exists all the way to paradise, and that the only place where understanding is complete is on paradise. And those are teachings right out of the Urantia book. We know that there are magistrates in the universe. We know that there are courts. Right now, the bright and morning star Gabriel, the firstborn of this universe, is preparing to go to trial with Lucifer, right? And that these things happen in the universe of universes. It's a very, but it is a, to go to law is at least a civilized way to disagree with one another. And it's like somebody told me one time, you know, in the old days, if a guy didn't like what you were doing, he'd send a bunch of other guys over to beat you up and burn your house down.
Right.
At least Now he takes you to a court of law, which is a much more civilized way of dealing with a conflict. You know, if you have that serious of a conflict. And thank God that we do have more civilized ways of dealing with conflicts. And conflicts are going to be around with us for a while, folks. So, you know, part of what Phil was saying, you know, it's part of learning to live together and work together and be partners with each other, because we are very, very different, all of us. We all have a unique viewpoint, and, you know, we come from different cultures and backgrounds, and it's not easy to get along sometimes, never.
And it's so beautiful to see Paula and Andre, that it's so pleasing for people to see that we finally have learned a lesson, because we are young in the movement, you know, we are young. I mean, we're barely 50-some years old, you know, in a movement. It's nothing when we think of other movements, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And to be learning.
This is like the beginnings of the Christian church. I mean, this is like such a, you know, it's very, 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 we're definitely in our infancy, absolutely. I think we need to be patient with ourselves, too, and gentle with ourselves about that.
So to be doing our baby steps just a few years ago, and to already be coming to that fast of a resolution, you know, peacefully and without going to court, I raise my hat to all the people. And like I say, it's a gift in disguise. If we take the time to take the black bow and the black ribbon and the black box and the black wrapping paper and the black everything and look inside the box, there's a shining diamond that's looking at you and just offering a pearl of wisdom. And this is what this situation was. It was a gift in disguise, just like Jesus was a gift in disguise in his time. Some people didn't take the time to unwrap that gift in disguise. Like they said, he came in the unexpected raiment. So sometimes the most beautiful gift of wisdom comes in unexpected raiment. And this time we have learned our lesson, because on both sides, the foundation learned a beautiful lesson that they will upgrade their licensing agreement. And the people in the conflict have decided to resolve it peacefully without going to court. And it was like, hallelujah. I could hear, you know, the angels celebrating, hey, those kids, they're learning. So that is very nice. Now, the team that's working on the family festival, first of all, we have a wonderful team, and they've all come together without even being asked. It's like a calling. We have Thomas Orgila, who's so wonderful. He's the chair of the program, and his companion, Aurora Hill, is with us as well. We have David Graves, who's been an incredible help with the festival on the computer side, the website and everything. And working with him, we have Lisa Ray, the beautiful Lisa. We also have a wonderful soul. Her name is called Kathy George Moore, and she's with us. We also have Patrick Yesh. We have Crystalline Beek, that many of us know. We have the talented, creative and talented Christina Seaborn. I just heard you mention, Paula, that Charles Olivier was at the Chicago session, which I saw. And Charles has accepted to be with us at the festival. I just love the man. He's got such a soul, you know. So it is such a pleasure for us to have Charles, and you, Paula, will be there, and Andre, hopefully you'll be with us.
I'll be there for sure.
Yes, it's going to be so wonderful. So what I would like to do, if it's okay with you, is give the point of view of each and every one, so that it was so wonderful this morning. I called people, and then I said to them, you know what's great, team, is that what you're telling me, I wouldn't have thought about saying it that way. And that's the beauty of teamwork. No man is an island. And so the Urantia family is a whole group, and everybody's got their worth. And so David Graves, wanted to say that the festival is different from a conference. And again, there's no competition in all this. Everything is complementary. As an example, a conference has more like plenary presentations where people go, they sit, they listen to someone talking and explaining their experience or what they've learned or their discoveries or whatever. The festival is aimed to be more interactive. It's going to be like a family exchange, you know. So it's going to be a wonderful festival in that way. Just think of, you know, sometimes it makes me think of a family wedding. When you go to a wedding, what happens? You put yourself on the nines. Do you say that in English? You know, on your best.
Sure.
Yes. And so you just bring the best of yourself to that celebration, and you celebrate with it.
Now, does that mean we all have to be dressed up?
Well, I hope people don't come undressed. We don't have any we don't want any horror movies. No, but I mean to say, yes, everybody will come dressed up. Their soul needs to be dressed up.
Okay.
You know, it's at the soul level.
But I'm asking, we don't have to become informal attire.
This is the best of the best, you know. So they've wanted to make this clear. And the beauty also, a new thing is we are looking to bring in speakers from the outside whose ideas and ideals are similar to ours.
Excellent.
So that is an excellent addition to the family festival. And folks, this is just the beginning. This is
I have an idea on that score, since you want to bring people. How about if I contact some of the guests that we've had on the show that are for outside the box guests that are not that are not your aunt's book readers, but people that we've had on the show, and ask them if they would come speak?
Absolutely, Andre. We hope so, because there are some, we don't want to mention names, but there are some of your guests that have been so instrumental. I was watching a movie of one of your guests last night, and I was thinking, I was praying and saying, oh, Jesus, this would be such a gift if he would come, because what a man, what a precious work he's doing for humanity, you know, talking about... he has like a long video. So, sure, that's a great, great, great idea, because we are going to do this. The Urantia family is meant to be planetary. That means it's not in a box. It's outside of the box. It's the whoever feels the love of God, whoever feels the spirit of brotherhood, whoever feels, you know, connected at the spirit level like we do, within the readership of the Urantia Revelation, you know, there's going to be small group activities to help connect together, you know, to do social networking. So I want to say right from the beginning that we invite and encourage all the readers to contact us for their ideas and suggestions to benefit the festival, you know, because it is a family gathering. So it's a melting pot of everything that's going on. We want to inform. The vision I had with this festival, Paula and Andre, is it's going to be a triannual every 3 years, so that we know that one IC, the fellowship has their triannual event, which was IC08 last year. We know that UAI, the International Association, has their triannual event, which was this year in Spain. So next year will be the family triannual, and so on and so forth. And so every 3 years, my vision as a spokesperson for the festival, the family festival, is to see that we grow in harmony as a family, that we, and it's all inclusive. Every association has the reason for being, and then on the third year, hey, we all get together as a big, beautiful family party, family celebration, where we grow, we share, we connect, we inform, we present projects that have happened within the last 3 years, we inform what's coming up for, you know, until the next 3 years. And so when we go back in each corner of the world, we can say, you know what? I know, because I was there. And so we all know the same thing. And we can also encourage each other. Like I've been saying to people, if, let's say, readers from the association or the fellowship or and the unaffiliated readers or any many people come to the event. And let's say someone wants to start a project. Like last year when I was asked to be the MC at ICO8, I remember talking with Pradhana, and Pradhana was telling us the vision he had about his project. And I took advantage of the conference at ICO8 to present him, and I asked him to stand up and to speak shortly about his project. Well, beautifully enough, someone felt inspired to encourage them financially, and I know that the fellowship offered many books to them. And after this, month after month, we kept receiving beautiful pictures of Pradhana and John DeToy being in Patagonia, the most southern part of South America, promoting the Urantia book and the Revelation, and seeing souls, you know, smiling, having received the book and all this. So this is my vision, that as a family, we come and we help one another. I see, I have, just like Martin Luther King said, I see readers helping one another and saying from one across, one organization across to the other, you know what, brother, I can help you on this. You know what, let us help you because we have the finances for that. You know what, let us do this for you because we have the means for that. And so we help the planet grow together. And we start, not start, but I mean we move in a harmonious momentum together. And
I
want to,
you know what, before you, the one thing I want to make sure we cover, Diane, is just some of the nuts and bolts details, like practical stuff. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think that now, I think as of recently, if you want to go to Canada, if you're an American, you have to have a passport. I don't think it used to be that way, but I think it is now. Is that true?
Well, I'll make it more clear. If you go anywhere in the world now, when you travel by airplanes, you need to have a passport. It is not just Canada. I mean, we go from Montreal to Vancouver. We need to show our passport because
Hold on. I don't need to show a passport when I go to other parts of the United States. I'm saying, but you're saying when you go from one country to another, it's always you. I thought that.
Yes, if you go to Europe, if you go to the States, if the States come to Canada, if the States, okay, you go to Europe or whatever, you need to show a passport. That's the international way of identification.
Okay, so you're saying that even in Canada, even if you go to another part of Canada, you have to go show a passport?
Well, yes, because not as a police military gesture, but as an international way of identification. I went to out west a couple of weeks ago, and I completely forgot my passport, and I told them I had my driver's license and everything. They said it's okay because you're within the country, but
right,
usually we would ask you to make it a habit now to travel nationally or internationally with your passport, because that's our way of identifying who you are. Period.
That's interesting. You're the first person that's ever told me that. Maybe because we're just not sophisticated in America here, but
well,
that's,
and
very,
it's easy, you know. It's only for us. It's only $75.
Sure, sure.
It's good for 5 years.
So the passport. Now the passport. Do you have to, is a passport for any? See, I don't even know how this works. I haven't traveled internationally since 1989.
They recommend that anytime you travel across the border, you take your passport with you. I mean, if you want to go to Canada or Mexico, you might be able to travel without your passport if you have a good ID and a birth certificate.
Right.
Highly recommend that you have your passport.
But what I'm asking, a passport is that's good for any country?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't
worldwide.
Okay. I got it.
And also, before we go too much further, we had a couple of comments on the board. One was a suggestion, Diane, that you play Earth at the festival, which I thought was a neat suggestion. And the other one was just if you could get a little more into the program of the festival and what the program is going to be like.
Right. And that reminds me, by the way, I want to make sure that we talk about that Pacho Banton is going to be there.
Yes, we have the confirmation of Pacho being with us to play us his his wonderful music. And there's also, for whoever does not know yet, there's also a possibility that Pato might be part of the Montreal Jazz Festival, which is, I think, the second world most important jazz festival. And I have contacted the founder of the Jazz Festival. A friend of mine knows him personally, and so again, a beautiful connection. And when I got to him, I was told, oh, I know Pato. So that was wonderful that the founder of the Montreal Jazz Festival, which is a very highly celebrated festival around the world, knew of Pato, and so Pato and I have been working together. He sent me a CD of his music, a letter, and all this, and so we're working, and let's pray that Laurent, the festival founder, will accept. And they are just going to be two street corners from where we are at the University of Quebec in Montreal. We're going to be hosting the family festival, the Urantia Family Festival, at the University downtown Montreal. You cannot have more bullseye than that. It's dead center. And what people need to know, the readers, is that Montreal becomes one big party. Not party like get drunk and do all kinds of weird stuff. I'm saying one celebrating city for 2 months nonstop. We start at the June 24th, which is our provincial holiday, and we stop at just before Labor Day. And so the whole city, there's going to be fireworks, there's going to be the Jazz Festival, there's going to be the Urantia Family Festival, there's going to be the Montreal, the World Competition of Fireworks. It's going to be like there's the Old Montreal. We're all in the heart of that. So it's going to be one beautiful celebration, so much so that some readers have written to me and said, you know, Diane, we are going to the festival, but can you let us know if it's going to be possible to stay for a few more days because we want to visit the city and all this? And the answer was yes, we are staying at the university residences. And when I went to see the organizer about a month ago, he was so happy to say, Diane, you know what, we just received the award. We were awarded 4-star for the rooms at the residences within the university residences contest or whatever. They were given 4 stars. So they're going to be nice accommodations. We have the restaurant for us. The program is going to be right there. We have different rooms. We're going to have breakout rooms. The family festival is going to be, since it's a celebration, it's not going to be an academic gathering. So there will be what I call the big family room, the auditorium. In the family room, we're going to meet to do our plenary, to do our prayer and worship, our musical beginning of the day. And then after this, when there are going to be, it's a mix of both, times where we will gather as a family in the family room for a very specific something, like the latest scientific updates or the latest this or that. And then after this, during the day, throughout the day, there's going to be breakout sessions where people will actually have a choice to go throughout the weekend from Thursday night to Monday noon. There's going to be a chance to go to different breakout sessions to learn and share with people in all kinds of aspects. You know, there's going to be games, there's going to be name it, anything. And this is why we want, like Kathy said this morning, she wants everybody to feel the ownership of the festival, you know, as a member of the Urantia family, because it's a family festival. So she said, Diane, make sure that you tell them to contact us for any suggestions, you know, because it's a festival to learn to participate and work together, to grow together.
Okay, let me ask you, how about something, and this is something I know some of your answerers are not going to like, but I think it's really important. Have you thought about creating some shared rituals that we can have together as a family? Some times of, you know, where, I mean, we're going to have that with prayer and worship, but are you going to have any kind of ceremonies or rituals that we can take back with us that will be that will, you know, be
yes.
memories for us. Because I think what happens with some readers is they think ritual, they think, oh, that means some dead, boring thing. People just go through the motions. Remember that Jesus was not against ritual. He was only against the fact that the Pharisees didn't have their heart in it. So, you know, but I think this would be a great opportunity for us to create new rituals and to have that could be ways of demonstrating or of performing demonstrating our solidarity as a community.
Well, yes, and I'm glad you mentioned it because indeed we are. We will, Andre and Paula, have that. And we have our famous Crystalline, who's on your show regularly, who will be making a very special presentation and is going to be in that kind of optic. And we have other people that will do this as well. What the readers need to know is that the program is in process. It's in development. It's already there, yet it's being added and added and added. We had to create the website. We had to create the registration online, which is all done. We had to create the flyer to inform people officially. We had to close in the deal with the university. We had to get Pato to confirm and the Jazz Festival to be informed so that there's a chance he may be there. Can you imagine what it would be like if Pato is invited at the Montreal Jazz Festival, where about 20,000 people are sitting on the street celebrating, and we would be there to clap our hands for Pato? That would be an incredible thing to listen to him sing about the revelation to the general public right there on the air. So, yes, we are, Andre, going to have that. And there's more and more being added. Now that we have secured all the basic structure, we are working on the program, and such beautiful things are happening. People are calling me and saying, hey, you know what, Diane? I was inspired to call you because I have this idea and that, wow, this is a great idea. Let's do it. It's never been done. So we're taking note of it. And we're adding, you know, so this is why I'm saying that the festival, and there's going to be a lot of time to celebrate. It's not going to be a tight schedule. Again, think of a wedding ceremony. You don't have like a big
birthday party.
Yes, exactly. We don't have like at a big birthday party. You don't have like 9 o'clock is this, 9:05 is that.
Right,
you know,
right,
it's
right.
Not the Olympics. We're not going to be at the Olympics. We're going to be at a family celebration, so that we want free time. We want people to be mingling together and really nice and learning to grow.
I really hope this would be an opportunity for people to come. I would love to meet some readers who've never been to anything before. I think this would be a great. I hope that I don't know, you know, if you have any idea yet about who's going to be there or how many, but I think it'd be a great opportunity. I just really encourage everybody, whoever can do it, to promote this as much as possible. Because I'd love to meet some readers that I've never met before too. That would be a great thing.
Well, it's we must be on the same wavelength, my dear, because when I approached Pato and told him about the event many months ago, as soon as I was back on the project, back on the front burner, I called Pato and asked him right away. He was so wonderful. He said, Diane, count me in. I love that. I'm going. And I said, you know, Pato, I have an idea. Instead of preaching to the converted and doing your concert or your show inside the auditorium, how about doing it outside? We're going to open. Let's say we use that to open the conference, the festival. Let's go outside. We're right downtown. We're during the Jazz Festival. People, the streets are loaded of people walking around. Well, let's go in the garden. You know, there's a garden at the university. Let's do the music outside. And if people walk by and they say, what is that? You know, people celebrating and you folks look like you're in such an enthusiastic mood. You know, what is it all about? There's our way to do our ministry. Enjoy. With fun. It doesn't have to be, you know, all serious and, you know. So I thought it was a great idea. So we're going to do that. We're going to Pato.
Well, you know, there's a place I don't remember where it is. Somewhere, in fact, Paula could probably find it because you're just so good at that, Paula. You're like a human computer. Well, I know you're probably.
No, I'm a computer.
I'm sorry.
I'm a human with a computer.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. Anyway, but you have such facility with this. You know, there's a place in the life of Jesus where Jesus talks about how, you know, he says something about how people will be attracted to us by. There's one of the phrases
yes.
he uses is stimulating intellectual communion and some other things. There's some other things that he uses, other phrases he uses about what would make people attracted to us as you know, spirit-born mortals. And I think, you know, that's the way I see this, is that hopefully people from the outside will see, you know, this incredible fellowship people are having and saying, man, I want this. I want whatever it is they have, you know.
Yes, I remember Andre and Paula at IC93. It's already 16 years ago when I participated there, and we had such a great attendance. I think we were almost 1,000 or maybe 1,200 anyway. My whole family, I come from a large family of 12, and my whole family came, and I will always remember I was the only reader of the Urantia book, and yet when they came to IC93 and saw a bunch of readers together enjoying themselves, my family, one after the other, came to me and said, Diane, what is it with all of you? What kind of food do you eat? Are you taking something? You're so joyful. What is it? You people look so happy, so filled with joy. I said, that's what the Urantia book does to you. It liberates you. It frees you. It opens. It gives you wings. It enlarges your horoscope, you know, and that's what it is. And I was so touched that my family said that, because before that, they thought I was part of a sect, or they thought, you know, that what is this that she's been into now? And they came to celebrate with us, and they're the ones that came back to me and said, wow, did we ever enjoy ourselves? And it was just such a sight to see so many people gathered together in such a spirit of joy. Well, that's what the Urantia book does, and that's why I said to Pato, let's start the whole thing by being outside on the street, and it's going to be wonderful, and we celebrate, and if people come around, we don't force people, but if they come and ask us, we don't need to be preachers, we just need to, you know, invite them in and be with us, and then let the Spirit guide them. That, like they say, the act is of man and the consequences of God. So let's just do the first little step, and then let the hand of God move in and do the rest.
Wow.
And there's two people
Andre,
I would...
Oh, go ahead, Diane.
Oh, there was just... I want to make sure that there's two people contribution that I mentioned during your program, because they were so beautiful to, and they are aimed to inform your readers as well. Did you want to say something, Paula?
Well, there was a quote from Lou, and also... Oh, I guess she dropped off. Crystalline was calling. I think she had a couple of things she wanted to say. But
how are we doing on time, Paula?
Well, we've got 12 minutes.
Okay.
So this is why I want to make sure I say what Crystalline wanted to say to the reader, to the listeners, and Patrick as well. Can I say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Crystalline mentioned she's part of the team, and she proposed something wonderful. She said, you know, with her experience and what she's been going through lately with different groups of people, she proposed to have a multimedia film competition to give people a chance to get the recognition of their talents and even possibly get an award for their contribution. And as she said this, because every week, every single week, we have a conference call with all the team members to make sure that we work on the program and we perfect it. I will, before we end, I will give the two websites where people can go see the program, have more details about it, register online, do everything. And then as we were talking and Kristalyn was telling us her proposition, it just dawned on us, can you imagine the big plus? By having this multimedia film, it will help to create a library of our growing Urantia family throughout time. Just like, and then I just had a vision again, just like our biological family, the same with our spiritual family, just like when parents have a baby born and they love the baby. What do they do now? Videotape and look how you
right.
You know, you look and we loved you from birth and you know what, look at mom and dad and all this. And then you see the baby becoming a child and smiling and growing and then an adolescent and an adult, a parent, a grandparent and so on. So with this competition, with this film, a contribution from different people, I think Crystalline's idea is fantastic because it will help to create a library where we can see the growth of the Urantia family. Sometimes I talk to elderly people, you know, within the Urantia movement, the Urantia family, and I say to them, it would be so wonderful to have a huge archive of what we could see, you know, what happened like years ago, or those people or whatever. So that's what we will do with the Urantia family, where people will be able to go back and see some of the things that happened and some of the growth that people went through individually and as a society, as a family. So I think her idea is just wonderful, and we are looking forward to have people contribute to that. And the last one I wanted to say is Patrick Yesh. We have an artist with us, the wonderful Patrick. And Patrick said that to him, the Urantia Family Festival is a program that will uplift people's spirit, you know, through many different creative activities in order to create a family spirit, including our unseen spiritual families. So Patrick has surprises for us with that, as an example, like the angels or the Trinity within us, you know. So to make sure, to remind us that we're not just focusing on our human nature, but also on our spiritual nature. And he said something so beautiful. He said, you know, Diane, we're part of a large spiritual family on the planet that's helping to bring the planet into light and life. And that's what the festival will be focusing on, as one global Urantia family, and to be conscious, to literally take consciousness that this is happening in the seen and on the unseen side of life. And so we are working as one global group of beings together to bring the planet. And with this notion of 12-11 and all this, 2010 and all this, I think there's a beautiful spiritual movement happening, and the United Urantia family seems to be right on. The timing is, I mean, God is perfect, so it can only be perfect, you know. And we're so happy to offer this to everyone. Thank you so much, by the way, for allowing us to inform your listeners.
Oh, this is great. This is great. We're going to do this again. This is. I mean, as things continue to solidify, we definitely get some updates here. So
there are two websites that people could access. If you want, I could mention them.
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Okay, www.tuff, like the United Urantia Family Festival, TUUFF.org. That's where they can get the information and get the direct link for to register online. And also, if they want to know more, www.urantiafamily.org. And we invite all the listeners and all the readers to contact us, because every month we will inform the readers of the newest updates about the festival, the program, and we need them to send us their email address so that we can do a constant update of what's going on. And the beauty is that we have an early bird registration fee until December 31st, and all they need to do is to give a deposit of $120, which is the...
And that reminds me, I've got to ask you, since you mentioned money, there's another practical thing in addition to the passport.
Okay.
What do people do with American dollars when they get to Canada? There's probably, because America, correct me if I'm wrong, American dollars aren't going to work, right? Are they going to need, I don't even know what Canadian money is called.
Well, two things, Andre. To register, they can go online, and the beauty is that we have our great Paula gave us a connection with Register Online, which is an organization that deals with the States and Canada. So people who register, it's all in Canadian dollar, but when they say we wanted to make it easy for people, so we said, look, we are going to offer people installment payments. So for as little as $430 Canadian, they can come to the conference, have a private room, have the meals for the 4 days, have the conference fee, have the banquet, have everything. And so what we are asking people is if they want, then they just have to use their credit card, give the deposit of $120. It locks in their early bird fee. And then in January, in March, and in May, I think, we're going to take the other installment, which is about $100. So it makes it so easy. It makes
So you're
it
saying
affordable.
That only it's all early bird registration fee is only $220 American.
I said for $430, they can come to Canadian. They can come to the conference, and because people want to, to go easy on their money, we are asking that to lock in their early bird price. All they need to do is pre-register and offer a deposit with their credit card. It will be put into Canadian dollars, so their money will be less when their credit card shows up, you know, their report
but
shows
how much,
up.
How much is $430 Canadian dollars in American dollars?
Well, I don't want to do this on the radio because depending on the day, the exchange rate is different.
Oh, okay.
But all I'm saying is that you folks are lucky because in U.S. it's going to be less than $430 will probably be $300 and some, you know.
Okay.
That whichever day the card is processed, okay, they have a set rate, you know. But we're saying that people don't need to pay full price now. All they need to do is give the conference deposit, and then their price is locked in. And then we just need to, in January, ask for another 100, and then in May, another 100, you know, and so on, all they have to do is book their flight, and that's it.
Okay, but I know we're probably already off the air. Are we off the air already, Paula?
No, we have 3 minutes.
Okay, I just want to ask you, and I'm sorry, the only reason I'm getting bogged on these details is because I'm curious about them, Diana. I think if I'm curious, other people probably are. I'm not an international traveler, so there probably are other people who are not either. My question to you is, when people come, okay, you've already talked about how to register, but what I'm talking about is if people want extra cash on hand, you know, if they want to have extra cash, can they use a
That was the second part of your. That was the second part of my answer. Like I told you, the first part was to clarify the registration online with their credit card. The second part, Andre, is that before they leave, the ideal thing would be that they go to their bank or to an exchange office.
Okay.
There's many of them, and they just say, let's say I want to spend $500 for the weekend. Can you give me $500 in Canadian?
Gotcha.
And
okay.
You are so lucky because you will be given more than $500. For us, it's the reverse, you know. But for you Americans, when you will come to Canada next summer, if you change $100 U.S., you will get 100 and some, whatever the rate will be that day.
Okay.
And they will give it to you in Canadian, so when you come here, you already have your currency.
I got it. Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for that information because that's very helpful.
Sure.
And I like the way you're making all this very convenient for people.
Oh, yes, and those installments makes it so easy, and yet it locks in the price so that to get private rooms, and we have a restaurant that has reserved itself specifically for us, so it's going to be one tightly woven family festival. It's going to be nice. I really look forward to this.
Okay. Hallelujah. Praise the Lord. We're going to have a good time.
Yes, thank you so much, and I want to wish a merry, merry, merry Christmas to everyone, and we look forward to see you all at the United Urantia Family Festival.
Excellent. All right, folks, we are out of time, but next week, now Paula is going to be going to the Parliament of World Religions, and Paula, I just made a unilateral decision, which I know you'll approve of, which is that when you come back from the Parliament, we want to do a show with you and Crystal and anybody else who may have gone to the Parliament to talk about what the Parliament was like. because it's going to be in Australia. I was at the Parliament in Chicago in 1993, but you guys are going to be there. I think Sheila Keen Lund is going to be there. Is Ann Garner going too?
No, Ann is not.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're going to have to do a show on the Parliament when you come back. Next week, okay. And then tell us who else is going to be there besides you and Crystalline. And
Buck Sheila. And Arlene Weimer is going to be there. Marvin and Franz O'Gowron.
Okay.
Sheila Keen Lund.
Right.
Christina Seaborn. Larry Guy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Lots of people. That's awesome. Well, listen.
Yeah.
We will talk about that. We will have you. We will definitely do a show about that. I just want everybody to know. Next week, I will be doing the show myself with Larry Watkins, manning the board. We're going to have Niles Goldstein on, who's got a book out called "The Challenge of the Soul," and it's going to be. He's going to talk about how to be a spiritual warrior, and he gives a lot of analogies from the martial arts and boxing and other kinds of things. It's a pretty interesting can of worms. So we will be doing that next week. And in the meantime, have a great day. And remember, that I'm going to give out these, even though we're already off the air, I'm going to give out these two sites again. It's yourranchofamily.org and TUUFF.org.
That's right.
The Urantia Family Festival. So blessings to everybody, and we'll all talk soon. Have a happy day.
Much love.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. If you would like more information about the Urantia Book, or if you just have comments or questions, please feel free to email us at cosmiccitizen@xnet.com. That's cosmiccitizen@xnet, the letter X, net.com. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.